So I didn't know what a rattler was until Dave Arnold introduced it to me. And it's not something that I knew much about at all, other than when I tasted it, it was delicious. And the rattler that he made me, Dave Arnold being one of the great food minds of our generation, we had Booker and Dax together, and actually go get his new Spinzol Series 2. It's a rotovap. Actually, I'm sure people listening, most people have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you have somebody that's into beverages and some color techniques where you need clarification, rotovap is great, and you can get it with the Spinzol, so check it out. Dave Arnold also introduced me to the Rattler, but it was a grapefruit version, and he makes very potent drinks. And it was top of mind, and I don't know why, but when I met the Athletic Brewing team literally 4 years ago, it was maybe a week or two before the world shut down. Can you believe it's been 4 years? I don't know why, but I mentioned that would be a great flavor to work on. Last year, they came out with something I've been asking a lot, a Rattler. And actually, drinking this light beer mixed with lemonade was created for like some bike race, which there were the origins of the Rattler. There was a bike race and there was a bar owner. I think he ran out of beer and he had to make some kind of decision on the fly, much like how Caesar salad seems to be made. Like, just throw a bunch of shit together and see what happens. And the Rattler was born. Long story cut short, it was well worth the wait because the Athletic Brewing team made a beautiful Rattler. The Athletic Sweet and Sour Pack, and it's back, and an online exclusive 24-pack includes 1 6-pack of each, the Blueberry Lemon Rattler, the Raspberry Lemon Rattler, the Tropical Reset, and the Mango Sour. I like a Rattler, and it's even better that it's non-alcoholic. It's great on ice. It's a perfect way to cool down as the weather starts to warm up. Use promo code ATHLETICGIFT20, all one word, to get 20% off your order at athleticbrewing.com. Check out Dinner Time Live, Netflix, Tuesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though, but take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Domo Media. Thank you a lot, Tango, as always. Joined with Chris Yang. We got Yuno producing. We are remote. We're going to do three things. We're going to do an Ask Dave, a top five power ranking, and then a culinary arbitrage price fixing game. It just dawned on me now. Actually, it's dawned on me before, but just uttering the words culinary arbitrage, I should be wearing a Patagonia sweater vest. Check out my Excel spreadsheet about the restaurants that have the best value.
Does have a certain air to it, yes.
What a loser I am. I saw some photos of Chris Yang eating some glorious food yesterday.
Oh, shit. I don't know if I'm supposed to. I feel like I'm in the middle of cracking a case, Dave. And I feel like it's
bad. Look like you're eating with a lot of Asian peoples.
It's bad juju to break a story while you're still investigating it. But I'm hot on a trail here, Dave. I invited Dave out to this. I found myself unexpectedly.
No. He invited me while he's eating.
Because I wasn't sure what it was. Once I got a look at what we were dealing with, I was like, Dave would want to see this. Legitimately, I wasn't going to invite you ahead of time because I was like, he's being annoyed by this dinner. But once I saw what we were getting into, I was like, I think Dave needs to come see this. But he was busy. Here was the basis of this is a totally legit basis of my investigation. I like the Chinese food in LA a lot more than I like the Chinese food in San Francisco. I will say that flat out. I don't think that's surprising. You know, it's making a face like that's surprising. That's like not news. Okay. Like that's not news. But
if there's one person that says that it's better, You can't trust them.
You cannot trust them. It's not a mark on anything. There's just more of it here. It's better here. Here's the thing. I was like, this is not it. I've been to most of the places that people have said are like, this is the jam. I've been to the Bistro Nas and Newport Seafoods and Boston Lobsters and all and the Chengdu Taste and all of the hot ones that, you know, your eaters and lists of the world are going to say are the best Chinese food in LA. And they're all good. They're all delicious in their own way. But I was like, there's this many Chinese people. There's something else out there. And last night, I was proven correct. And I can't reveal anything yet. I'm still investigating. I don't want to lose my invitation to this dinner. But we were in a chain Chinese restaurant, of which there are multiple locations in Los Angeles. But this one in particular has private rooms. And I was with Li Wei from the Joint Seafood, who brought his own fish and clams and lobster and had the kitchen prepare them. And there's another level, guys. There's another layer beneath. And I sent some photos to Dave surreptitiously. I was texting him through dinners being like, look at this thing.
I'm more surprised that this exclusive Asian club lets you in. Excuse me, Chinese exclusive Asian club. The Courvoisier Club. That's what I'm going to call you guys. The Courvoisier Club.
You know why? Like, if you don't understand why that's like, Dave wasn't even there, but if you don't understand why that's a perfect fucking name for this club, I walked in this room and nobody smokes. Nobody we were eating with smokes, but it was just redolent of sweet, sticky Chinese cigarettes and a big bottle of Courvoisier sitting on a shelf there. Like, you nailed it without even being there. Like, that is the exact kind of room I walked into.
While I wasn't invited, nor would I have partaken in such exclusionary activity because I'm a man of the peoples. I've been in those rooms.
They're good rooms, though, man.
I'm just saying you should title this club the Courvoisier Club.
I'm just saying there's another layer out there. It is the Courvoisier Club. It was a great meal. It was all Chinese people except for my wife. I told my wife that there'd be another white wife there, which was a lie. So she was alone in the hinterlands. I'm trying to sneak Dave into the Courvoisier Club at some point, but this is just goes to, this is like our whole thing, right?
You know, the restaurant next door. You know, shout out to, what's funny, totally separate from the Courvoisier Club. This is much more of the cigarette butt club. I would say call it the cigarette butt club. We're visiting, Hugo had a play date, and on the way to the west side, we stopped by to pick up some food at Chris Ying's neighborhood, Glendale, the home of the Armenian restaurant community. It's just Armenian food everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's been a while since I stopped by Hamlet's Kitchen. It's funny. Chris, what chef went up to you and said they were...
Yeah, this is another insane story. Ben Shuri, one of the great chefs of our time from Australia, a New Zealander in Australia, runs the restaurant Attica, a good friend of Dave's and mine going way, way back, more than a decade at this point, was visiting Los Angeles. And this is a big shout out. He was texting me. We're trying to get lunch and he's asking me about restaurants where we should eat. And I'm suggesting places. And he texts me and says, have you heard of Hamlet's Kitchen? And I was like, how the fuck have you heard of Hamlet's Kitchen? And as a reminder, Hamlet's Kitchen is the tiny, absolutely tiny, hidden Armenian kebab shop. Like in a little parking lot in Glendale that Dave and identified as, like, what is it, Dave? It's just like the wood fired kebabs, and it was insane. Yeah,
it's one of the few places that makes their own charcoal, and everyone's like, what do you mean? Well, they take a bunch of mesquite and they burn it down into little charcoal bricks, basically. And I went there, ordered ahead. I think that's a pro move. If you're going to go to Hamlet's Kitchen, call in, because it's a long time. Also, remind yourself, it's cash. And what I did say, when I said club cigarette butts,
yes,
because that's what it is there.
Yes.
Okay? There are a lot of people smoking cigarettes outside. And when you, if you're lucky enough to find this place, we've talked about it before. It's just worth mentioning again. If this is a good rule, a rule of thumb, I'm just taking a cue from Bill Simmons. Like if certain things happen in a season or a team, like, oh, note to self. All right. Maybe I'll bet against them. This is a big rule that doesn't get enough shout out. If a restaurant has been in business for years and it's impossible to find and they go out of their way to not be busy, that's my kind of restaurant. It's the restaurant that you want to eat at because you know what? For some reason, they're in business and they don't have to be in business. Okay?
I thought you were going to say, if you see a lot of people smoking cigarettes outside of a restaurant, it's probably going to be pretty good.
And you know, that kind of restaurant can encourage cigarette smoking behavior, you know? For example, and I'm not making any connection to what I'm about to say, but like, you know, in Sopranos where they're going to that pork store, I bet you the food there was amazing. You know?
Yeah.
Saccio's or something like that. I bet you the food was amazing.
Yeah.
Just saying, right?
But Ben,
I'm just talking about a place that they don't advertise, and it's really good. Hamlet's Kitchen, a lot of people smoking cigarettes, and this time I went there and I picked up my food, and then an Armenian guy smoking a cigarette, and not just smoking a cigarette, he had already smoked several, you could see from his feet, but he was smoking it to the filter, right? He goes, just being facetious. Oh, is the food any good here? What should I get? Clearly.
Oh, he was fucking with you? He said that to you?
Fucking with me.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's fucking amazing.
I was like, yeah.
Respect, man.
Yeah, it was respect. And again, Hamlet's Kitchen, you would think 4 years since the pandemic. We should probably do a pandemic holy fuck episode. When I first went there, when Yuna told me, I thought it was designed for the pandemic because they have real trees, fake trees in like urns, whatever they call them, on the outside. So it's almost like they're setting up like a children's barricade, right? That's not really a full wall because clearly it's porous, but like it's meant to say, we're trying to give you some coverage so you can't see the sign Hamlet's Kitchen. They're trying to hide it. And then they have a plastic table that's literally right at the door when you're entering the entrance. That's almost like they're selling Girl Scout cookies or lemonade.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
The kitchen's on the left. You have two women on the right. It's clearly there's a freezer in the back that has the dumplings and all these other things that I don't have the courage to order yet. It's like a dance hall. It's like a community center to some degree, right? Whatever is in the back. If you have the courage to even get there, I think there's a lot of people that have got, like, number one, can't find Hamlet's Kitchen. Number two, they actually go around to the back, park the car, and they're like, no.
Guaranteed.
No, it's so intimidating.
Guaranteed.
They're like, no. Let's head back. You know, it's that feeling you get when you enter a restaurant. You're like, yeah, this isn't for me.
It is.
They're exuding. Get the fuck away from here.
100%. 100%. They have passed. You've passed the first test. The penitent man shall pass. You've ducked the saws, but you've arrived at the part with the letters that fall to the pit, and you're like, I'm out. I can't do it.
And if you are able to do there, you get to, if you pass through all of those obstacles, you get to meet the most lovely people, mm-hmm. right? Everyone that works there is super lovely. And let me tell you, the food is as good as ever.
It's fucking good.
So here's a shot. Here's something I want to offer to the listeners of the Dave Chang Show. I'd like to make a list of the best restaurants in America that you find in this similar path, right? That's the rubric. A restaurant that's fucking awesome, that has bad reviews, right? Because maybe people don't know what to order or they just didn't understand the vibe of the situation. And I'd love to see photos of restaurants that are intentionally difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe Hamlet's Kitchen is in my top 10 restaurants, maybe top 5 in LA. It's as good as anything, and I stand by that.
That's so funny.
You got to get the lemne and you got to get the eggplant too.
The eggplant caviar. Good. Yeah, very delicious.
Yeah.
I was probably, this is so funny you mentioned that you're being in that part of Glendale though, Dave, because you might have been there at the same time that I was across the street. Right. So Dave and I had a shot at a studio.
Why Kebab?
I saw Why Not Kebab. I had dinner with the kids at Shakey's next door. And I'm going to say this.
Hey, Shakey's good.
Fried chicken at Shakey's, pretty good. JoJo pretty potatoes, good. No, no.
Pretty good. Pretty good, pretty good.
Mojo potatoes, can I tell you, pretty good.
Can I tell you another secret that I'm just going to let people know that I ordered some yesterday? Because we got home, I was doing a test run on some of the recipes for dinner time. And it dawned on me all I had was some sugar. And I didn't eat anything. I ordered some Mr. Lee's, which is a Vietnamese sub shop out here.
The chain sub shop, yeah. Lee's.
Very, very good chain sub shop. You know what they do better than anybody? Their fried products. I know we've talked about this once during the pandemic. Whew. Their chicken wings.
Mm-hmm.
Their chicken nuggets. All their fried rolls. Ah, damn.
I know, man. You're totally right. You're totally right. The banh mi, I'm not even like that into. But the fried stuff, Jeff's kiss.
I'm into the banh mi. I'm into the bread. I'm into the whole thing. What I don't understand is why they have so much talent sitting there and nobody talks about it. It's like.
Absolutely.
They need to do better marketing. I'm like, guys, they probably don't even make it. They get it from like a Chinese Cisco or Vietnamese Cisco. Mm-hmm. I don't care. They're fucking delicious.
Yeah.
Zero chance they're making it in-house. Will not prevent me from buying.
Underrated.
Chicken avian flu be damned. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
By the way, before we get into the actual show, here's some sobering thought. It's 4 years since the pandemic. Over 4 years now. Can you believe that?
It's totally bananas, man.
And I remember having a conversation with a senator, and they were really confused me because they're asking. So you know, they're talking to a lot of people about the foodways, food systems, and securing food, and their priorities really were trying to get the food centers, the distribution centers, of food like operational. So America wouldn't shut down. I remember this conversation distinctly because I don't know how we got there, but this person said, and maybe, you know, you could look it up, every 5 years or so, 5 to 7 years, maybe even 10, there was a potential threat of some kind of virus. So if you go back, it was before you had swine flu, we had Ebola in New York City, right? That was 5 years before 2020. Ebola in New York City. I don't know if people remember, like, dude, that was fucking nuts. we had to track down the restaurants that these people went to, right? And before Ebola, you had H1N1, another 5 years. And another 5 years before that, it was swine flu.
Yeah.
And then before that, it was SARS. And actually, I'm missing in between 2000 and 2015, we had potentially MERS.
Oh, MERS always gets overlooked. We had MERS. Look,
and that was MERS.
Underrated MERS.
I'm just saying, like.
No, you're right.
People, I hope to God.
Yeah.
I hope to God this H1N1, this new avian flu that's now been transmitted to cows. I'm not trying to fearmonger here, guys. I'm just saying, like, is it possible that it is really like clockwork every 5 years?
I'm reading some things right now that are like, it's whatever, historically every 10 or 15 years, but with climate change and everything else, it's becoming more frequent.
Yep. So that's what the senator said. Traditionally, it's been, you know, 10-ish years. Like, you know, there's a pattern. But because of global warming, globalization, it's shrinking down to 5 years.
As depressing as that is, here's the most depressing thing about this. As I Googled this for you, as I'm looking into this, you know, Google does like the people also ask question. Here's the top question related to my search. Are they planning another pandemic?
Holy shit.
Fucking, that's what people are asking, man.
I'm stocking up on ivermectin, folks.
Fuck you guys, man.
Toilet paper, ivermectin, and canned fish.
Are they planning another pandemic? That's like, is there going to be another Indiana Jones movie? Like, fuck you guys.
Anyway, I don't want to fearmonger, but it's definitely in the back of my mind that this is how it started before. This is how 2020 started. Oh, man. There seems to be this thing that I keep on reading about. Whatever, it's so far away. Asia is so far away.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, it keeps on... Oh, every time I would read, oh, there it is. There it is. And here's the thing. Every time I'm opening up the newspaper, reading the newspaper, there's maybe a small story about this thing. I'm just hoping to God it's just a fart in the wind. Because I'm built for lockdown, folks.
I know, man.
All right.
I know you are.
Anyway, that's not what I wanted to talk about, but it's been on top of mind. It's been top of mind. All right, guys, three things. When I would say for maybe 10, 13 years, I made every playlist at Momofuku. I was very much into music, and we had an open kitchen at the first noodle bar. And, those early iPods could never equalize the music volume. So that was a problem. And I think we spent as much time changing music as we did cooking food and making as many playlists as possible. It's unfortunate because there's probably like damn near almost 1,000 playlists that I thought were all very good. And music became an essential part of our restaurant. And I think there were a handful of other restaurants that really set the tone of how and what kind of music you could play. It started to get louder. It started to get more, I wouldn't say aggressive, but remember, before in music in a restaurant, there was no music. Two, if there was music, it was classical or jazz. So it took a restaurant. When I say there were other restaurants, you could go to a pizza shop and they're playing the radio, great. But if you were going into like a sit-down formal restaurant or like a sit-down restaurant and they're playing Ozzy Osbourne, No More Tears, that would be weird. But now it's like pretty normal. I think that is a tremendous amount of change. And one other thing that's happened is we made a lot of playlists. And I know this. There used to be a lot of people that would come in, record, or use Shazam. I would see our playlist on other people that would come in and say like, hey, we'll make the playlist for you. And that was a small business for people, making playlists for restaurants. And then Spotify happened. And then I remember Miffy Rigby wanted me to make a playlist, and I put that up. And then it had like 400 songs that we played a lot in Momofuku. And sure enough, again, don't shoot the messenger here. I'm just saying, like, is it possibly a pattern? I don't know. There were a lot of B-sides on that thing that were weird. And next thing I know, I'm hearing them a lot in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And something's happened, though. Along the way, there was a brief period in time, 2 to 3 years, where you could go to a restaurant and hear two things. One, a very generic playlist, or two, something that was really curated. Hyper, hyper curated. I think to the extreme was what Jordan Kahn did what's the restaurant? The spaceship? Vespertine, where he had a band actually try to time it out. That was my holy grail dream is, and I tried to do it at Co a bunch, the first seating to time it on average to the song, to the dish that everyone was eating.
Hmm.
Very hard to do. And if you could do that, that is some mastery level shit. But, I found that it became less and less curated music and more these common playlists that you get off Spotify. I remember one of the restaurants that I love besides the food, Gabrielle Hamilton at Prune, would only play complete albums. I thought that was the fucking best. Only play complete albums. And we're just missing that idiosyncratic personalization of music. And I don't blame anybody. It's hard. It takes a lot of time to constantly upload playlists. And not a surprise with the algorithms out there, they start to sort of be the same. Like, I remember Josh Gaines at Saison would just play greatest hits 80s. And then every restaurant now plays 80s music.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 80s music right now is the most popular music in restaurants.
By the way, Josh Gaines will deny this until the day he dies. But I remember I was eating at Saison or the weird sushi bar he opened for a minute one time, and I swear to God this happened. I Shazammed a song that was playing, and it wasn't the original like Hall & Oates. It was some weird like cheaper knockoff version. I was like, Josh, are you skimping on the fucking versions of the songs that you're getting here? Is that how you afford these ingredients? You just have like Paul and Boats instead of Hall & Oates? Anyway, sorry.
So I think today, you know, if you go to say the Four Horsemen, you're going to expect James Murphy to curate exquisite music and very unique. I think it's harder and harder to find something unique. Why? I don't know. But I would give you my rules, about three rules about making a playlist. And I'm pretty sure, because I haven't made one in a long time, and I'm regretful that I don't have these playlists. They're on a Mac drive somewhere, and I just don't think I'm ever going to be able to like get them ever again. And the one thing about, say, Spotify, love you, Spotify, but doesn't have all the B-sides and you know, weird foreign-issued presses of things. This is mine. I'm pretty sure someone's listening right now is like, oh, this is antiquated. It's not really up to date, but whatever. These are my three rules. Number one, and only because the fish are playing at the Sphere, and there's a lot of people in my universe going to the Fish show. We're recording this on the 25th of April. I've probably been to a dozen Fish shows in my life, mainly to do a lot of drugs. But like, I've been to a lot of Fish. But at some point, maybe like Dave Matthews too, where everyone's just stopped listening to certain bands, I stopped listening to Fish. But I enjoy it. And there are people that are big Fish heads. The number one rule is you can't play Grateful Dead and you cannot play Fish. Can't. Listen, I like those bands quite a bit, but you can't. You can't. You can't win. Because if you play a wrong song, a Grateful Dead fan is going to be like, ugh. And if you play anything Fish related, you just don't want to open up that can of worms. Don't do it. Don't do it. That was like literally my number one rule. No fucking jam bands. No string cheese bullshit incident. No fucking Mo. No none of that shit. You know? Maybe we played Widespread Panic a couple times, honestly, but like none of that entire genre, out. You can't do it.
Okay, but this I want to ask.
Well, the only time I ever played Fish and like weird live versions of Fish songs was for Lockhart Steele, and I think on his birthday, who co-founded Eater, and he's a huge Fish head who I guarantee you is at the fucking Fish show right now. My older brother's there right now.
I want to ask though, is there so this. This very specific rule, you know, leads me to ask, like, the broader rule, are you trying to please everybody? What are you trying to do here?
No. But Fish and the Grateful Dead and jam bands, listen, I enjoy it. I haven't gone to a concert in many years, 20 plus more, Jesus, 25 plus years. But you can't play it in a restaurant. I can't articulate why you shouldn't. Other than maybe the only thing on Dead you could play would be like somebody might play Touch of Grey or fucking American Beauty and Ripple or some bullshit like that. But you can't play, you know, Dark Star and other things that are esoteric and strange. And long story cut short, you can't. I don't know why, but people get upset. I found that people get upset. You know, that Dave Chappelle, John Mayer,
they're the barbershop
where they're saying like the barbershop and they play white music, Latino music and black music. Yeah. It's just like, it's kind of music that 1 out of 100 are going to really like. You don't want to alienate 1 out of 100. You want to alienate 1 out of 50 is okay. Okay. So that's sort of the rule of thumb. Just start off with that. Two, you cannot play songs that people can sing. No, Sweet Caroline. No Bohemian Rhapsody. Nothing. Any of those anthems.
Their journey. Yeah.
So you can't play those anthems. You can't have your restaurant in a situation where everyone's belting tunes together. Like it's like 12 o'clock at a bar, midnight in a bar.
It's the same cringiness of one of those coordinated wedding entrances where all the grooms and bridesmaids.
Worst nightmare. All these guests belting Sweet Caroline. You know, you can't play Tiny Dancer by Elton John. Can't do it.
Oh my God. That is your nightmare, I know. Do you think that's a universal nightmare, or is that just you?
I think for me, but again, like, these are songs that, so the third one, I wanted to play music that is good ambient music, that whether you listen to it or not, that there was a rhythm and a beat that sounded good and sensible. So a lot of indie music, you can't even understand the lyrics. Like, not that I played that much REM in real life, but REM's a great band to play, like early REM, because no one can understand Michael Stipe's lyrics anyway. So it's fine. So something like that. But the one suggestion I would say is, when curating a list, go for the esoteric shit, right? I'll never forget that first sort of 3 months we were open and we started to build our, we couldn't get one person in our door. So we just started to build this business one by one. And I'll never forget that I put on a playlist all the songs from The Who that never get played, like ever. All the B-sides that never get heard. And again, like, I would never really play Who songs anyway that are well known, the Baba O'Reillys, the, you know, My Generation, whatever. But I can't even remember. It was like 25 songs that only a weird Who fan would like. At the end of the meal, the diner is just like the one, we had like one diner. And he said, "Hey, I just wanted to tell you that I can't believe you just played all my favorite songs. I can't believe that you didn't play one song that everyone knows from The Who. That means a lot to me." I tended to try to find songs that only a real fan would enjoy. And you don't have to play a lot of them, right? You don't have to play a lot of them at all, right? I remember, huge Pavement fan, clearly, so I'd play like Frontwards or something like that. That was on their first album they put out before they signed with Matador. And like, you'd get somebody that would listen to that and be like, "Oh, this guy gets it," or they got something that's different. So whatever your genre of music is, don't be afraid to play something that you think, "Oh, no one's going to like it." If you play, and it doesn't sound alienating to people, all you need to do is reach one or two customers by playing a song that you know other people like quite a bit. And if you do that, I think you can build a following. That's my three rules.
Do you think of a restaurant as a place where, I mean, do you want people stopping and saying like, "Hey, what was that music you were playing? Can you tell me more about it?" Is that what you're after, or do you want it to fade into the background?
Here's another thing that people don't understand, why it's hard to calibrate the audio and music, the volume of music in a restaurant. Why it can be super loud, let alone not accounting for the surface of your restaurant. You know, if you have soft materials that absorb music. It's hard to understand the words when you have a lot of people in a restaurant. If you have a jam-packed restaurant, you're not going to hear the words. You're just going to hear the bass and like, know who's playing. But you can't identify things clearly in a room where it's much more stable. And the reason why is people forget, I don't know if people forget, they don't even think about it, that if you have a packed restaurant, human bodies become the sound-absorbing material. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes you have to play it louder, so people can hear. And it's hard to calibrate when it gets, you know, people start to leave, then you have to lower the volume, whatever. But there's a sweet spot. It's almost like a golden, like the golden hour, where you're sort of in between busy in a restaurant and you can hear everything. And that's the time, right? It's like maybe like 5 to 7 or maybe like 9 to 11, where people are lounging. They're having a glass of wine, a cocktail, like an after dinner drink, and you can listen to the music. And that's when it's okay. But even still, you're not trying to play songs that everybody knows. You're just trying to play songs where it doesn't sound bad to people, but it sounds really good to some people, to few people.
Do you, last question on this, do you listen to music at home when you're eating with friends, if you're having a dinner party or something?
Grace, I don't know. Grace has some like jazz thing. That's what we do. But I think most part with our kids, we listen to a lot of Disney stuff.
Yeah.
And Beatles and Beach Boys still.
Yeah. Lots of Disney soundtracks for dinner.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
All right, let's take a break.
All right, guys, we've got an Ask Dave. Just a reminder to our listeners, you can always reach out to us at askdave@majordomomedia.com with your questions for a chance to be featured on the show. This one comes from Austin H. Hey, Dave. Love what you're doing with Dinner Time Live. I'm a city slicker planning a cross-country trip by car, and I'll be stopping in a couple smaller cities I've never been to before that don't have a thriving restaurant scene. What's your tip for finding good eats in cities that are off the beaten path? Thanks.
It's funny. When I'm on a road trip, the only thing that I'm thinking about is, can I get to Texas to eat barbecue? You know, it's like, how do I drive through these lesser cities and get to the cities that have good food?
The road trip is your intermittent fasting on the way to the thing you're actually trying to eat.
You know, part of the road trip is eating crappy food at gas stations and, you know, things that you normally don't get to eat. And for me, if I'm doing a cross country or some kind of road trip, it's about getting to the destination that has great food.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing a cross country trip, I'm going to try to plan around barbecue. No question about it. Whether it's Kansas City, Tennessee, Carolinas, Texas, you know, I'm planning around barbecue. Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like that. I also think there's something I understand this question from Austin here. You're going across the country. You want to be able to just say like, oh, I stopped in this city and there I found this amazing local specialty way off the beaten path. I stumbled into this incredible dive, had this local sandwich, whatever. I get that. And I've tried to do that. But it's not impossible to stumble into something like that. But it's also like it takes work.
And you're not going to get it done in a few hours.
You're not going to just pass by and just happen to get the best food somewhere, right? Like that's the whole point of what you're talking about too, with things like Hamlet's Kitchen, where it's like, listen, this shit's hard to find sometimes, and you can't just look up a list and find these places.
AI is going to change it all, for sure. It's going to know all your preferences and all your likes, and it's going to say, hey, you know, Siri, or hey, whatever, I got 3 hours. I'd like to eat at a cool restaurant that has, you know, you don't have to tell it what it's like. It's going to know everything that you've eaten in the past year plus. It's going to dial it in, much like an algorithm to a song, and you're going to, that's how it's going to be. I think that's going to be the story for most people about mm-hmm. dining and where mm-hmm. to eat out.
That's true.
So Austin, just give it some time and ChatGPT will replace everybody. Oh man, is it going to replace a lot of jobs in the food business?
Good advice, Dave. Just Austin, just postpone your cross country road trip until ChatGPT can find these places for you.
Or just drive to Texas. Whatever it is, plan it around barbecue. That's as simple as that. Plan the whole fucking trip. Whatever city that has great barbecue, that's what you do. Drive to those cities and bypass the those other smaller cities.
Yeah.
That are wonderful.
Texas is big as fuck, man. You can basically reach that from anywhere. Just go to Texas for barbecue.
It's probably our worst answer to any Ask Dave. Apologies. But I tell you the truth. When that question popped in my head, the first thing I looked at was, he's going to be starting on the coast, right? Cross country. Texas is equidistant. Just go to Texas, baby.
We're going to be stopping in a couple smaller cities. Yeah, don't. Just go to Texas.
I'm serious. Just follow the barbecue chain. There's so many good spots. Man, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you hoping to stumble into here, Austin? You're going to stumble into something better than some barbecue? Just keep driving. Just keep going. Another couple hours, you'll find some barbecue.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit-free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round, so you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit-free.
All right, let's take a break.
All right, guys, I wanted to do a top five, but I kind of wanted to set it more up as a power rankings. So the ramps are out and spring is in full swing. Dave, Chris, what are the power rankings for spring vegetables this year? And I've given you a list of vegetables that are in season, but I'm sure you guys probably don't need it. But go ahead and give me your top five.
Well, we just did an episode on spring vegetables.
How is, you know, not to be a nitpicker here, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but in this list of power ranked spring vegetables, the last one is winter squash.
I have the same thing. I just pulled it off the Bay Area. I think there's like a co-op website where they're just like, here's what's in season during the Bay Area.
My favorite spring vegetable is winter squash. Okay, you know, that's my answer. Winter squash is my favorite spring vegetable. Just an old winter squash that got lost in the refrigerator.
I don't. We try to talk about it on the Maya Rudolph Ron Funches show, and I got to say that's one of our better episodes we've done. I just watched it; I thought it was very, very good. If I do say so myself, but I definitely undercooked that lamb. I'm so mad at myself. well, not too bad. I just didn't have time to rest. Spring menus are a lie. Number one, they're just a fucking lie. They're a marketing lie. None of these, I just wrote down, these are the spring vegetables that I think most people would associate with spring. Even though ramps aren't nationally available, I'm going to say ramps, asparagus, fava beans, peas, morels. Ramps has the longest season, but depending on where you are, they are all staggered and they're not growing at the same time. Like, they just don't. Maybe you'll have morels and ramps, but you might have two of the three, one of the five, but like, you're not going to have four of the five growing at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yet somehow they magically appear on the same plate.
They're all in the primavera pasta.
Those are my five, and I don't even think there's a way you could argue against that. You could also add strawberries. Again, depending on the season. Sugar snap peas don't happen until later when the weather gets hot. And it's lamb. That's really what I think people think. I know I just said meats, but soft-shell crabs as well.
Yeah, I think that in spring you get a lot. You also, you know, the other thing is you tend to get the little shoots and you know, undergrown vegetables that you can harvest early. Your shoots and flowers and things like that are nice. But of this whole list, really, with spring, the things that I genuinely look forward to, because you can get most of this stuff in some form or fashion the rest of the year. But favas for sure, ramps. Real peas for that tiny window, morels, like these things I genuinely do look forward to spring to eat these things.
And if you don't have access to ramps, spring onions will work too.
Spring onions and delightful too.
What a surprise. Spring onions don't grow in spring.
Unlike winter squash.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
All right, let's take a break.
All right, fellas, it's time for some culinary arbitrage, the game where our contestants try to guess the prices of items on menus at restaurants around the world. We're going to start with São Paulo, Brazil, to Jiquitaia, which Google Maps describes as a cozy eatery with unassuming decor that serves varied cuisine with a Brazilian twist. All right, so Jiquitaia is our first restaurant. And just so you guys get a picture, it's a nice-looking restaurant inside. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there. But it's also São Paulo, so things might be a little bit more affordable. I have the price in reals, but I also converted it to dollars. So if you guys could guess by the dollar. We'll start with the main course, the barbecued fish of the day. And this is just
Can I ask, how the hell did you get this restaurant?
I Googled like crazy. I spent a lot of time Googling these. and trying to find like, you know, local small businesses or like, you know, restaurants that I would like to try.
I mean, Dave, I'm with you, man. I could not. This is the most random thing I've ever heard in my entire fucking life.
I've been to Sao Paulo a few times. I've been there once with Chris Yang. It's a great city. Great city. Great food.
Incredible.
I would need to be on Ozempic if I lived there.
Oh, my God. Mortadella sandwiches alone.
Oh, fuck me. All right, what do we got?
I also try to look for restaurants where you guys haven't seen the menus. So that's
the I have certainly not seen the menu at Jicataya.
Thank God. All right, well, let's kick it off. Our first one is the main course, the barbecued fish of the day with fish and cassava porridge. It serves two. All right, so give me your price in U.S. dollars. What do you think it's going to be?
Well, it's so hard internationally. Sao Paulo, it also depends. I'm just looking at I'm not looking at the menu. I'm looking at judging a book by its cover, the decor. I think it's $34.
Serve two, $47.
Dave takes round one. It's $36 or 190 reals.
Okay. I got my bearings now. Okay. You can get a whole. Okay. I'm only looking at this Instagram, by the way. It looks dope.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. All right. Our next one is a feijoada that's only available on Saturdays. It's a black bean stew with pork. Pick from light stewed with smoked ribs, sausage, jerk beef, and pork knee, or complete with added pork ears, feet, and beef tongue.
I love feijoada very much. And, you know, you put the what's the powder? Cassava powder they put on everything?
Manioc. Yeah.
Feijoada is beautiful. But another, if I was defending the case of the prosecution of beans, only reason the bean dish is good is because it has every kind of meat possible cooking in it.
Yeah. Exactly. Like
everything. Every cut of every delicious cut is cooking legit in the feijoada. And I love it. It's so good. Just, you know, I'm going to slander beans all day long. But I'm going to say it's $22.
I think, shit, that's exactly where I wanted to go. Because I think you can't, because feijoada is so ubiquitous. And I don't think you can get away in Sao Paulo serving like a super expensive feijoada. It just doesn't sound like it's modernized, deconstructed, done up in some ridiculous way. So I think it has to be at that price point. So I'm going to say $19.
Chris, you take round two. It's $16.91 or 89 reals.
It's very affordable.
Let's do this one for the side of the crispy roasted piglet. It serves 3 to 4 and it's only available on Sundays.
The fish was 32 or something?
The fish was 36.
It was 36.
This serves 3 to 4. That's a
45. $48.
I'm going $68.
Wow. Chris takes the first restaurant. It's $43.70 or 230 reals.
It's all right. He needs it.
All right.
That really hurts, man.
It's true.
For our next restaurant, we're headed to from Sao Paulo to Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're headed to a Laotian James Beard Foundation finalist in Kelowna in Minneapolis. All right. So hopefully those are your hints. Okay. And we're going to start with a small plate, the saku or tapioca dumplings. The menu description says there's shiitake, cremini, pickled radish, peanuts, pistachios, and tapioca pearls. And this is in Minneapolis.
Is a vegetarian dish. Is it a vegetarian restaurant? Is that what you said? Or no?
No, it's they serve everything. But this dish is vegetarian.
Vegetarian small plate dumplings. Shit. I feel like I was too slow to the buzzer. And I got to give space. I feel like you can't get too close. I'm going to say 15.
Wow, Chris, on the nose, $15. Nicely done.
I wouldn't have gotten there if Dave hadn't taken 12, though. I would have said 12 for sure.
Basil wings, small plates, tempura fried wings, Thai basil, jalapenos, and signature dry rub.
What is it?
This is basil wings. Tempura fried wings, Thai basil, jalapenos, signature dry rub.
$15.
$19.
All right, Dave's got this one. It's $16.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Okay, this could be the beginning of a comeback here. Let's go with an entree. The Bucatini Talay. Talay is Thai for seafood. So it's shrimp, squid, scallops.
$32. $32.
You son of a bitch at the fucking quick draws.
Chris, what do you got?
I shit you not. He's hitting these.
Actually, you know what? Since you didn't lock your pick in, I can read the rest of the description. Tom Yum Ragu, Thai basil, Tobiko scallops, squid, shrimp.
That's not going to help me unless you were like 6 pounds of gold leaf. Damn it. 29.
Dave, $36.
That's right. Fucking Dave's. This is like Family Feud. Just whoever goes first, there's no rotating in.
It's fucking Dave. I know it's exactly like that.
All right. We'll give Dave this restaurant. So it's tied 1-1. So far, our last one. Okay, final round. Back in Detroit, home of today's NFL draft. Also, where our producer
is today.
Yeah, the draft is the day that it's.
Me? Did I get picked?
No, Chris. I don't think they picked you. All right. There's only three menu items for this, and it's Dooley's Place, which is like a dive. It's kind of like a Burger Shack or a place to get conies in Detroit. We're gonna start off with the chili cheese.
$4.25.
$2.75.
Damn, Dave, where are you eating chili fries these days? Chris, you got it. $5.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Fuck you, Detroit.
This next one's a hot dog. It's just a hot dog.
$2.75.
Right? $2.75. Shit.
$3.50.
Yo, it really comes down to this last item. Dave, you got it. It's $2.50. Holy shit. All right. This one's for all the marbles, boys. A cheeseburger.
$4.
$5.
Oh, Chris, you bungled it.
Shit.
It's $3. Shit. Dave, you win. We really went down to the final round. That was crazy.
I panicked. Shit. Shit.
Wow. What a great day.
Why would it be $5, you fucking idiot? Shit.
What a great day. I mean,
shit.
This is reminiscent of the Super Bowl, New England Patriots versus the Atlanta Falcons, 28-3. What a victorious comeback by me.
That was an unbelievable run, Dave. Holy shit.
Yeah. I just tapped into the force, boys.
The Dooley's Place, I don't know. You can't look that up. It's actually like you have to look at photos of the menu, and there's no way you'd be able to find
it. Shit. So,
wow. All
right.
Yep.
Nicely
back
done.
To your Courvoisier Club, motherfucker. And on that note, thank you to Chris Ying for joining us today. Make sure to tune in to Dinner Time Live Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All episodes of Chris and Dave Dine Out available to stream on Hulu. Give us 5 stars.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.